My name is Steve Skinner. I'm here with Stacy Stein. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning.
You know, we've been hearing about this comet in the sky, and I just heard about a new black hole, maybe not a new one, but newly discovered. And I thought we have to turn to the closest thing I know to a rocket scientist. His name is David Aguilar. He is the past director of science, information, and public outreach at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysicists in Cambridge, Massachusetts, as well as a naturalist, astronomer, author, and space artist. He's out of this world. He's on the phone with me right now. David, how are you this morning?
Steve, I'm doing great. What a beautiful morning here in the Colorado Rockies.
That's true. And I heard if I get up between 4 or 5 in the morning, I can see a comet. Is that true?
Yes, one is, it's pretty tough to see. It's very low in the horizon. Once again, the people in the southern hemisphere are seeing a beautiful, spectacular comet. But the good news is it's rounding the sun. And it should come back out in about a month and a half. So let's wait about a month, and as it comes around the sun, we'll see it at sunset.
All right, that sounds
So it
awesome.
should be in our sky.
What about this black hole? I feel influenced by it.
Well, it's only 1,000 light years away, and remember, a light year is 6 trillion miles, so it's really close. It's about a 3-day drive, I think. But it was something that we found, which is odd, because we usually find black holes when they belch, which means they've eaten a star, they've eaten some planets, they've eaten something big, and they send out all of these X-rays and these gigantic X-ray telescopes to pick them up. And this one didn't do that. But what we found is there's a star system, a double star, two suns that are orbiting around each other, and one of them is orbiting around this black hole. And it's big and powerful enough to grab onto the star and make it circle around it like a ball on a string. So that's how we found it. And it's fun because, again, it's in the southern hemisphere. We can't see it visibly, but they can see the two stars down there. Of course, they can't see the black hole, but it's close to us, and it's a big black hole.
What is a black hole?
A black hole is a gigantic star, and I mean a big star. The sun's about 1 million miles in diameter. The Earth is 93 million miles away from the sun. This thing is the diameter of Jupiter, 600 million miles in diameter, and it collapsed. It ran out of fuel, and it just collapsed. And instead of exploding, it kept collapsing, and it disappeared into space and time and left this gigantic hole behind that sucks anything into it that gets near it. And that's what a black hole is.
And you can't see it?
Can't see it because even the light that would be radiated out from it is bent and turned around and pulled back inside the hole. So if you were going in with a flashlight and you were trying to shine it out to your spaceship out there, the light would be bent and pulled right back inside and the spaceship would never see you. But X-rays, because they're so energetic, I mean, they pass through our body. X-rays are so energetic, they do escape, and we can see the X-rays.
That is totally bizarre. When were black holes discovered, and how many do they know about, or do you know about?
Hundreds of millions of them out there, but they're old. And every galaxy, a galaxy is a city of stars of anywhere from 200 to 400 billion stars. We live in a galaxy, the Milky Way. Every galaxy in the center has a massive black hole. So we're wondering if these things, the big ones, really formed very early on in the creation of the universe, and then galaxies formed around them. And although they do eat stars all the time, it seems to be part of life in the universe. So when you look at a spiral galaxy, a beautiful picture, there's a black hole hidden inside of them. And in fact, the Andromeda galaxy, which we can see this spring, a little bit later this spring, and you can see, some people can see it naked eye. I need binoculars to pick it out. It has two black holes in the center, which tells us that galaxy is two little galaxies that combine together, and both of them have a black hole, and they're warring it out. One of them's going to win, one of them's going to lose. But when they join, it'll just become one bigger, gigantic black hole.
Talking to David Aguilar, he's an astronomer with a telescope about the size of a small school bus. We talked to a local student last week, and she's wanting to be a rocket scientist, and she is willing to go to Mars. Let's talk about Mars. What's waiting for her there? What's waiting for her there?
A world that she will not find very pleasant. It will be beautiful in the sense that, you know, when you drive around the mountains here and you see all this gorgeous red soil that has a lot of iron in it, that's what the entire planet's going to look like. That's its color. It's red. No other color. We occasionally find some yellow, possibly sulfur deposits, but it's a red planet. The skies are pink because of all the dust that is thrown into the sky, so she's never going to see a blue sky. It's always going to be pink. The sun is a little bit smaller in the sky. She can't breathe and breathe the air because there's no oxygen to breathe on Mars, so she's always going to live in a spacesuit when she's outside, which is okay. And what's really weird about Mars is that because the atmosphere is so thin, it may be up to 70 degrees in the daytime, but at night it's going to drop down to about 150 degrees below zero, and it drops within minutes of the sun going down. So huge shifts in temperature on the outside. She'll see dust storms that will cover the entire planet for 3 or 4 months and not let up. So you can't even see 50 feet in front of you for 3 or 4 months. what else about Mars?
What do you think about the Mars mission? You know, there's when a mission was first announced, there was an organization, a company that took sign-ups and said they were going, and thousands of people signed up to go to Mars. And I was telling this very smart young lady and who loves the outdoors, even though it's like as cold as Fraser where we live, it gets to about 150 below here as well. I told her it was a one-way trip, but what do you think about a manned mission to Mars?
I think we'll do it. And first of all, let's talk about that survey of people who wanted to go to Mars. It was an interesting survey because I think their initial sample of people who applied were about 500 people. And 499 of them were men, and there was one woman who applied for it. So the chances of finding a guy on, you know, on that mission is pretty big. But Mars is a very bizarre place in that sense. However, I mean, all of us have been quarantined. All of us have been living indoors in our houses all of this time period. And that's pretty much what you're going to find when you go to Mars. You're going to be living indoors most of the time. Putting on your spacesuit, walking, it'll be spectacular and beautiful, but learning to live indoors, it'll be a different type of human being. It'll be a different type of way of life. I think we'll do it. I think it's part of who we are if we can solve some ecological problems on our planet and get rid of this virus. I think it's part of our destiny, but they will be different. Martian people will be different than human people because after a while, the gravity is much less on Mars. Those who were born on Mars and lived their lifetime on Mars will not be able to return to Earth. Their bodies won't hold up with Earth gravity. So we're going to create another species of humans.
That is so bizarre. Let's talk about aliens really quick. You write some really cool books. You have fantastical outer space fantasy books with really cool rocket ships, occasional alien. Do you believe in aliens? And what do you think is our nearest neighbor?
Washington, D.C. is full of aliens. I'm certain of it. there's something really weird going on in there. You know, so far, Steve, we've been listening now for 30, 40 years. We have been looking for signs. I will say I'm going to give you two answers. One, I don't know what the hell UFOs are. They seem to be real. They seem to be a phenomena that now our federal government is releasing videos of them. It's something. There's something going on there, and I just don't have a handle on what that is because I don't have enough information. So that's one piece. The other piece, though, is we've been listening to thousands and thousands and thousands of stars like our own that should have planet Earths around them, and we have not heard a peep of radio broadcasts, television broadcasts, military radar that should be traveling through space if they have technologies comparable to us or superior. We're not getting any of those indications. So we have a dilemma. Here we have the military showing us pictures of videos of things military jets are chasing that are flying in our skies. And then on top of that, we're not getting any sign from the universe that nearby there's anything intelligent living on those worlds. So at this point, it's a dilemma open for discussion. Some people may, I mean, we may find life, but it won't look like you and me. It won't think like you and me. It may not even be using the technologies like you and me. And so consequently, what does that tell us? Life may be more bizarre than we ever imagined, or we may be more alone than we ever imagined. But it brings up the problem again. What are all these videos we're suddenly seeing by the Department of Defense that are being put out? I don't know.
Well, that's good that I appreciate your candor and not knowing and keeping an open mind. I think about those early versions of Star Trek, you know, where Captain Kirk is dating a blue gal and then she turns into something with eight heads. You know, maybe it's going to look like we want it to look, but it really isn't that. When you look closely under the robes, it looks different.
Well, it's true. I love the movie Galaxy Quest.
Oh, that's a great film. Yeah.
Oh, that's not right. It's Tony Shalhoub with an alien that looks like an octopus. Oh, that's not right.
I don't know. I think that the first series of Star Trek, they invented the communicator. They invented, you know, internet, computers. The only thing we haven't done yet is beam each other around.
Not yet. But I've seen some experiments in the lab that are kind of interesting. The difficult part is disassembling a body into atoms that can be beamed someplace else and then reassembling them into the same creature. That's the tough part. You may reassemble them, but it may not be what you think it is.
Well, there's some folks out there I wouldn't mind reassembling. We could try it.
You know what? I think it's an admirable project at this point in time.
David, I really appreciate you taking some time with us this morning.
Sure.
Great to talk to you. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I do. I want to have a conversation with you about creativity because you are one of the most creative people that I've come across. I love your music. I think we should talk one of these days, especially with folks kind of quarantined up. Let's talk creativity. What is it? How does it happen? What's the inspiration? What are the muses? Where does it come from? I'd really love to pursue that with you.
It's a deal. We'll do it in the next month or so.
You got it.
All right. Thanks a lot, David. Take care.